Mahindra against Mahindra Limited against the ITC. All right, and so I, as we were saying, you all have divided up the arguments and the issues, so will you tell us which particular issue you're going to discuss in your argument section? Okay.
I will be addressing the appeal of the ITC decision on the FERC's Roxor vehicle, finding that it infringed the cheap trade dress.
Okay, so you'll be discussing infringement?
Yes.
Okay.
And, yes. May it please the court. The Supreme Court in the Walmart and Traffics cases cautioned about the dangers of trade dress protection in depriving consumers of the aesthetic and utilitarian aspects of trade dress design. The 2018 Roxor, the accused vehicle, is a copy, a modern-day copy, of the original Willys military Jeep and the civilian Jeeps that followed pre-1955. The ITC committed errors of fact and law in finding that the cheap trade dress was not generic.
Counsel, this is Judge Stoll. I just want to ask you one quick question, which does your legal argument here rely on your view that once something is generic, that's it? It can never go back? It can never acquire secondary meaning?
Yes, it does.
What if I disagree with you as a matter of law?
Well, I think the facts will not support any finding of secondary meaning in this case. And let me first begin with how the ITC defined the genus that it was considering. And it did so by referring to the Jeep Wrangler, Jeep's vehicles that are sold today, which are SUVs. And it said, these are SUVs, commercial vehicles, and that the military vehicles, which are not commercial, their product design should not apply. And that is wrong as a matter of law. The original design, the Willys MB, was known throughout the world. It was the most popular, famous vehicle after World War II. Everybody knew what it was. Those members of the military who drove those Jeeps, the people who saw it in movies, newsreels, and pictures, they all knew what that Jeep trade dress was. And there is no evidence in the record, and it was certainly FCA's burden, to show that that design was not generic. So, turning to the evidence of the first introduction, according to FCA, a commercial version of their Jeep trade dress, they refer to the CJ5 in 1955. The only evidence in the record to support that is testimony from Kristen Spano, FCA's trademark attorney, which is at the appendix 50916, and also the evolution of an icon poster, which is at appendix 69975. The evolution of the icon poster talks about the introduction of the Jeep trade dress or the Willys vehicle. And throughout the years, FCA has emphasized its legacy that it has maintained that original trade dress throughout its vehicle lineup from 1941 through the present. Ms. Spano testified that the commercial Jeep trade dress was introduced in 1955. And if you look at the poster, she then testified, as did others, that the commercial impression from 1955 through today was maintained. There was no evidence as to the commercial impression of the pre-1955 vehicles, except for the one CJ, these two civilian Jeeps, which they distinguished, FCA distinguished, by saying that the front fender extended beyond the front of the grill. Everything else was the same. And the one difference was that the front fender extended beyond the grill. They did not distinguish or compare the substantial similarity of all the military Jeeps. And they also did not discuss how there was a continuing commercial impression from those military and civilian Jeeps, which even the civilian Jeeps contained all of the trade dress elements.
It sounds to me as if you're presenting what could be a very compelling argument that back in 1940s, maybe then this trade dress was generic. But what is the time frame that I should be looking at? And why did the ITC err in looking at, you know, the Jeep trade dress as of the time of the lawsuit?
Once generic, always generic. And you can't recapture a design simply by saying that there's one little difference. And how is FCA asserting this trade dress design? The Roxor is not an automobile. It cannot be driven on the road. It is a UTV. It is something that can only be driven off-road. It's sold in different dealerships, and it's directed to a different consumer. If I could direct the court to something that I think is really exemplifies what the issues in this case are, and that is at Appendix 53906. It is an email that was sent to Mahindra, and that the ITC and FCA submit is evidence of likelihood of confusion. It really shows the opposite. And what it says is this is from a consumer to Mahindra, not confused about the source of the Roxor. And he says, I have to tell you that the new Roxor is a sight for sore eyes. Personally, I am a Jeep fanatic, and I just love the Roxor. When the CJ series was retired, my heart sank. Today we are left with hipster Jeeps that, in my eyes, are not real Jeeps. So what we have here is a vehicle, the 2018 Roxor, that everybody acknowledges is a copy of the original Willys military Jeep. And yet, through trying to capture secondary meaning 70 years later through SUVs, that FCA now tries to preclude its sale. However, it's clear from that email alone that consumers desire that original design for whatever reason, whether they want to have nostalgia for military Jeeps or just want to drive around in the woods in something that resembles a military Jeep. It is something that FCA stopped selling years ago. And yet now, the consumers are deprived of something that they want.
I want to ask you one other question, counsel, which, what is the standard of review that we apply for determining whether something's generic and also for determining whether there's secondary meaning?
As far as the standard and the selection of the genus, that is a question of law, whether a product
that
is
generic.
That
wasn't my question, though. I asked you
a question of fact.
I asked you, Winford, whether a asserted mark is generic or not. Is that a question of fact or a question of law?
That's a question of fact.
And what about whether a trade dress has acquired secondary meaning? Is that a question of fact or a question of law?
Question of fact.
Okay, and so we review that for substantial evidence.
Yes.
There's a lot of evidence here supporting the idea that there's that the Jeep trade dress is not generic and that there's secondary meaning. Would you want to talk about secondary meaning?
Yes.
Okay.
When the ITC determined secondary meaning based on three different surveys, one in 1949, that had nothing to do with the Jeep trade dress, but was simply referring to the Jeep mark. Two, one in 1998 that only concerned the iconic seven-slot grille, which is not part of the trade dress. And then the survey submitted by FCA in this case. We are not saying maybe there is some trade dress for the Wrangler, but that is not the trade dress at issue here. This is a trade dress that specifically was formulated to hit the Roxor, which is a copy of something that's been off the market for many, many years.
Can I ask you something else? You just said something I thought was interesting, and I think I remember seeing it in your briefs, that the trade dress does not include the seven-slot grille.
Correct.
That's contrary to what the ITC said, right?
Well, the ITC said that it is a subset, in my words, of the vertical trapezoidal grille. But all the evidence shows that what consumers recognize are those seven slots, and that the Roxor grille, which had five slots, which were not exactly vertical and had the Mahindra emblem, was not an infringement of that trademark seven-slot grille.
Yes, that was the finding by the ITC. But what is the basis for saying that the grille isn't part of the trade dress?
The specific seven-slot grille and relying on secondary meaning evidence specific to the seven-slot grille and not vertical grilles in general with vertical slots from 2 to 20, that is not sufficient evidence to find secondary meaning in the trade dress.
Don't you have to look at the trade dress as a whole? That's your view. You see, the surveys have to be for the trade dress as a whole.
Yes.
Okay.
And relying on evidence of something that is not specifically defined in the trade dress is not sufficient evidence to support secondary meaning. And there's no doubt that if Mahindra was selling the Roxor to the military, that this would still be accused of trade dress infringement. So this distinction between military and non-military is a fiction that this court should not affirm. It would be a very dangerous precedent for this court to expand trade dress so that someone could recapture something that, as the FTC said in its 1948 decision, Willys, the predecessor to the FCA, did not even come up with itself. It was not their trade dress.
What law do you have for the proposition that once generic, always generic? I mean, that seems to be a key part of your case.
Yes, it is. And I think it goes back to, there are a number of cases that are cited in our brief. One doesn't come to mind right now. It will probably when I sit down. But that is the law. And it could never acquire secondary meaning. There's the Harley Davidson case, there's Merrill Lynch, there are a number of cases.
So you say if it doesn't acquire secondary meaning.
Even if it does acquire secondary meaning, it can never become distinct. And again, this original Roxor is a copy of something that was sold in the 1940s and 1950s. It is not a copy of the Jeep Wrangler. It doesn't look anything like a Jeep Wrangler.
That's a factual question, right?
Yes, it is.
Mr. Gravis, this is Judge Clevenger. On the genus issue, I understood that you contested the genus being formed at the SUV at the ITC level, but I did not see you raising that issue in your briefs to us.
We did, Your Honor. We argued that the
Could you point to me in your blue brief where you challenged expressly the genus being the SUV?
Page 32 of our response brief.
Did you say your reply brief?
Yes, responsive reply brief.
Isn't that too late?
Aren't you supposed to raise your issues in your opening brief?
We did, and we discussed that the proper subgroup, that the subgroup of military-type vehicles was generic, and therefore the genus could not be considered non-generic.
I think what the question was, where did you argue that the genus of SUVs is correct, incorrect?
Specifically that the genus of SUVs was incorrect? Well, it depends on what you think the SUV is.
I'm just asking because you argued the point below and it was rejected, but I don't believe you preserved that for appeal.
I believe we did, Your Honor.
Your belief is one thing, fact is different. So you need to find a clear citation in your primary brief.
Well, Your Honor, I'll try to find that, but I will submit that if a subgenus, a subcategory of the genus is generic, the genus has to be generic also, and that since they are asserting their trade dress against a subcategory that is not an SUV.
In the record here, was there ever a finding by the ITC that there actually was a genus in the World War II Jeep vehicle?
No. I don't think they found that there was a genus.
But you're arguing here that we should find that there was one.
Well, they're defining a broad genus. The genus should be defined by what FCA is asserting as an infringement, not just a statement that the Wrangler is an SUV. That's not sufficient. They're asserting it against something that is not an SUV.
Well, I was just pointing out, I didn't see the board making any fact findings relevant to these issues pertinent to the World War II Jeep, because they said the World War II Jeep is irrelevant to this whole conversation.
That's what they said.
You're making arguments to me, I believe, sir, today, that I should understand that there are facts that should be found with regard to the World War II Jeep as to whether it was iconic, whether there was public recognition, secondary meaning of all of that, but I don't see any of those fact findings.
I'm saying it's an error of law to exclude that World War II Jeep from consideration as to whether the genus is generic or not.
Well, why would it be an error of law?
It's an error of law because that is what it is being asserted against. So by analogy to In Re Cardua, where the court looks at what is in the registration and not what the party's own product is, you have to look at what the registration is to determine what's generic. And here, you have to look by analogy as to what products are alleged to infringe, even if they are different from that which is the trade dress party's product.
Well, let's hear from the other side, and we'll come back to your arguments, Mr. Drivis. Let's see, you agree that Mr. Cimino would go next, or how have you arranged it?
Yes.
Is that you?
Yes, thanks a lot.
Okay. Okay, please proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court. Judge Stoll, so used to wearing it. Judge Stoll, I'd like to start by answering your question. I don't think it's critical to affirming the ITC's case, but yes, you can recapture a generic mark. The Fed Circuit's Opryland case that we cited in our brief is express about that. It says that there were questions raised about genericness. The quote is, Opryland seeks to reopen the question of whether Opry is generic for country music entertainment. And they were faced with an actual decision that happened about 12 years earlier where Opry was found to be generic. And the court, the Fed Circuit, went on to say, whether Opry has been recaptured as a trademark is not the subject of these opposition and cancellation proceedings which deal with the registrability of Carolina Opry marks. However, Opryland is not a stop from showing the public perception of Opry as a significant component of the marks of issue. So it was saying when that is actually looked at, you can introduce evidence that Opry has changed in the minds of the public in 12 years. Here we're talking about 70 years, and here we're talking about one of the most famous trade dresses for vehicles in the U.S., matched probably only by the VW Bug, maybe the Porsche 911. So to the extent it was generic in the 1940s, it certainly isn't anymore. And I gave some thought to the question I think you were raising about when do you look at this? And if you take a look at the decision from this court in Converse, it's looking at secondary meaning within the past 5 years before infringement. So that would be 2018. So, you know, the 2010, 2018. That's when you look for secondary meaning. It makes sense to look for genericness in that time also. And there's no evidence. They don't even try to argue that the Jeep trade dress is generic then. But that's not the only reason why there is no genericness of this famous trade dress. Even back in the 1940s and 1950s, it was not generic, despite coming from the military. First, what are we talking about when we talk about genericness? For words, it's pretty easy to understand. A wrench. A wrench is generic of a particular type of tool. It can't identify the source who makes the tool. With trade dress, it's a little bit more difficult. You're looking at the shape. Is the shape so common and so generalized that it identifies a category of things? The Henry Cordoa case from this court actually sets that forward. It's got to be a common descriptive name of a class of goods. For us, it means do the six trade dress elements describe a class of goods? Are they definitional for the case of goods? And we introduced evidence and pointed the ALJ and the ITC to it that no other vehicle ever in the U.S. used these six elements but us, but Jeep, and then Mahindra.
Aside this issue, I mean, under our law, the first step is to identify the genus, right? And did you understand your adversary here to be challenging the SUV selection of the genus by the ITC?
They did. They did it late in their reply brief. But they argued that there was a 4x4 military-style vehicle that is the genus. But the ITC rejected that, and they had substantial evidence to reject it. The Mahindra's design expert, specifically testified before the ITC that that category did not really exist, and he made it up. I asked him at trial, do you have any industry materials to prove that that category exists? This is at Appendix 9270 for reference. He says, correct. You don't have any technical dictionary, correct. No auto dictionary, also correct. No textbook, correct. No industry papers, not cited, no. And you don't cite to even a single document in Mahindra's own files over the last 40 or 50 years that recognized this as an established category. He says in Mahindra's file, no, I didn't look in their files. There's no evidence that there is this 4x4 military-style vehicle, even if you don't find that it was waived. It's not a real chance.
Judge, I'll ask your adversary the question of assuming we had in front of us the question of what was the correct genus here. What's our standard of review? Is that just part of the genericness issue and a fact question?
Yes, Your Honor.
Or is it a legal question? Is there a case that says one way or the other?
Well, Henry Cordoba talks about what genericness is, and it's a question of fact, and it gives the standard, is it so generalized that it identifies a group of goods, a category of goods. And then it provides a test you can use to figure that out. But they're both the same question. Those are both fact questions. Is there a genus that the public views as being defined by the word or the six trade dress elements? And there's none of that evidence here. Whether you take the genus as SUV, like the ITC.
The selection of the genus sort of drives the inquiry.
Well, that's true, Your Honor.
I mean, once the genus here was drawn to all SUVs.
That's true, Your Honor.
And the game was over, wasn't it?
Right, but those are established categories in today's marketplace. Sedan, pickup, SUVs, and we introduce significant evidence that the use of our trade dress today is in the SUV genus. But even if you go back to the military, there's no genus of military-style vehicles. They have no evidence of that. They say it.
Well, there's been no finding.
Excuse me?
There's been no finding on this record.
There was no finding because there was no evidence of it. They argued it at the ITC.
Didn't the ITC? The ITC is talking about the evidence that Jeep trade dress. There's no evidence the Jeep trade dress is used or perceived as generic in the context of purchasing decisions. They really didn't focus on, as they didn't have to, whether it was generic or not in the 1940s, right?
That's right, for two reasons. One, they found that, the commission found that the military vehicle, which Mahindra was arguing, was a different market. They say it's exactly the same, but no, the test is for the relevant market. It's purchasing decisions. People aren't purchasing the Willys MB, the military vehicle. They are purchasing civilian vehicles. We started using the six trade elements in 1955. So the ALJ found that the difference between the 1955 stylized vehicle and the MB was enough to move forward, and there's no evidence of genericness with the 1955 styling. The commission found that it was two different markets, military versus commercial, and there was nothing in the commercial market. The overall point of genericness, regardless of what the, even if you say that a genus is automobiles back then, they, on page 25 of our opening brief, we put up a red, yellow, and green chart that came from their expert that shows the closest vehicles that are supposed to be military vehicles, and none of them have the Jeep trade dress elements. None of them have all of the Jeep trade dress.
And the ITC found that, right?
The ITC found that. That is evidence to support their decision. He mentions the 1948 case. The 1948 case was not looking at trademark issues or genericness. It was a false advertising case. There is evidence that we cite in our briefs that the two vehicles from the war, one was made by Willys, one was made by Ford. Ford made it pursuant to license from us. If we were in a trademark tribunal who was looking at genericness in a trademark sense, the use by Ford inures to our benefit as a licensee. They were two identical vehicles that the evidence of record was that the Army made the companies pull their brands off of them. That's the essence of a military vehicle. They looked identical so they could be changed around. And the fact that the public couldn't distinguish between the two does not mean that it was generic. It just means they were making the identical vehicle. But Mr. Hill, Mahindra's design expert, admitted clear admissions. No one continued with that vehicle after the war except Willys. It was stylized in 1955. To the CJ5, and only Jeep made the CJ5, those six elements. No one made those six elements since. That's not a generic category of, no matter how you define it. The MB was a single vehicle, it wasn't a category of vehicles. If it was a category, plenty of people would have done it. One quick point that I'd like to turn to our cross appeal. On the secondary meaning survey, their criticism is that it included the grill. The grill is an element of our trade dress defined in detail. It includes vertical slots. It includes the headlight position. It's got a trapezoidal shape that surrounds the headlights and the slots. And they were able to argue that they thought that there was problems with our survey to the ITC. They did make those arguments. They tried to Daubert our survey. The ITC judge said, that is subject to cross-examination.
That's not subject to appeal right now. Nobody's raised that issue.
Right, but I'm just saying they made this argument there.
I understand it's factual.
They heard it, and the ITC agreed with our expert that his survey was indicative of the trade dress elements and wasn't skewed by it. And, you know, we also tested the Roxer. The Roxer is a CJ vehicle. It's a Jeep vehicle with a five-slotted grill. We got 47% confusion rate accepted by the commission. Slots don't make a difference. It wasn't about the seven slots. The survey for likelihood of confusion of the Roxer itself shows you that you still get high confusion. You get high confusion even with different slots. We pointed to the Butler. It was one of their survey experts, the Butler controls. They ended up changing a bunch of stuff to have a vehicle to use as a control for the survey. They changed the front end. It doesn't have seven slots. They still got 70% degree of Jeep recognition. So the slots by themselves don't drive recognition of this famous vehicle. I'd like to turn quickly to the cross appeal. I think the ALJ and the commission here made a couple of fundamental errors. They're a little bit intertwined, so I tried to list them, but they do affect each other because of this weighted multi-factor test. The first one, as I'm sure you saw from our briefs, is we believe FAME was not weighted heavily enough on the new vehicle.
It's your view that when a trade dress is very famous, the similarities between the products to show infringement doesn't have to be significant.
Yes, but only because of the Kenner case. So from it's the Fed Circuit's view. The Kenner case makes clear in a reversal where the...
But the ITC had recognized that as law. You just are not happy with the way they weighed it. Is that correct?
Well, I don't believe they weighed it at all. They recognized FAME plays an important part. They said that, but then they said, but then they made no findings about the similarities and differences. They said, we did that in the first, infringement analysis, but in the first infringement analysis, there was no dissimilarities.
They used every element. They did identify the dissimilarities, right?
They identified the dissimilarities, but they didn't take the similarities, which Kenner says are more important, and weigh them, along with the other factors. And you can see in the commission's opinion, Your Honor, there is not much discussion.
The boxy body shape and the door cutouts, right?
Right. But they changed words of these elements. They changed design features to avoid words of the elements, but there are still big parts of those long elements that are still present. So, yes, those are the two that were still there, mostly in full, but there is enough of the other parts of the language of the trade dress to force recognition. And how do we know that? We know that from the 19% consumer survey that we introduced and was accepted as reliable and credible by the court. It's the only survey for the redesigned Roxer, the only one. We have a 19% confusion survey. That survey does two things, Your Honor. One, it tells you that the dissimilarities that the ALJ saw and thought would be meaningful to the consumer were not really that meaningful. They see, like the FAME analysis, they see the similarities and still recognize Jeep.
So your view is that with a 19% confusion, that even though there's other things that are different, like, for example, there's other factors that were not found in your favor, even in the first analysis, for example, like where the items are sold, right, that there was no way for the ITC to have, you know, as the fact finder, we shouldn't be giving them enough discretion, not only discretion, but review this for substantial evidence. We should not consider that there's enough substantial evidence because per se, 19% confusion should be enough for per se finding of likelihood of infringement or infringement.
I guess I'm coming close to that. But what I'm really saying...
It's really hard. I mean, yeah. I'm, as an appellate judge sitting here looking at this and saying, oh, 19% says, oh, I'm supposed to say there's per se infringement?
I understand, Your Honor. Here's the issue. A judge's view of the similarities and dissimilarities without objective consumer evidence in a trademark case should not be a trump card to the rest of the evidence.
But they did consider your 19% survey evidence. They just considered all the other factors, too, and came to a different determination than the one you want.
All the other factors, in the first one and this one, even in the redesigned one, the majority of factors still favor the Jeep brand. It was 8-4. With the Jeep brand, and that's with giving the 19% survey saying that weighs against us. There's not a case in this country where 19% weighs against the trademark holder. It has always been found, if it's found credible and reliable, every single case there is, this will be the first one to stand ever where 19% weighs against infringement in the 13-factor test. We have a whole string set of cases, the ones that are cited back to us, all had issues with their survey. This is an accepted survey. But what the survey does, it's not per se. What we're saying is the survey tells you, well, maybe the judge's subjective view about the degree of changes made to the vehicle, what he thinks the consumer will see, might not be correct. It's balanced against that objective evidence. So fine, you don't have to say it's per se infringement. You could say it weighs in favor, even is neutral, and then we're 9-3 in favor of infringement.
What do you do with the commission started with the proposition coming out of Converse that in the context of a trade dress case, accused products that are not substantially similar cannot infringe. Now that's the sort of their starting analysis.
I agree with that.
That seems to me to wipe out your argument that insufficient amount of weight was given to fame.
How do you...
Fame doesn't have anything to do with substantial similarity.
Right. So, but it doesn't wipe out the argument with respect to the consumer evidence that was of record.
No, I'm just starting with fame because that was your primary argument on appeal, wasn't it?
Well, look, if
we
asserted...
should reverse because they didn't give fame weight.
If we asserted the Jeep trade dress against the Honda Accord...
What am I to do with a holding from this court that says if there's a finding that these accused products are substantially dissimilar, they can't infringe?
Well, we believe that the finding of substantial similarity is incorrect and based on his subjective view and is contradicted by the objective survey evidence.
That doesn't have anything to do with fame.
Well,
whether they're substantially similar has nothing to do with fame. So all I was trying to do was to take what I understood to be your primary argument as to why it was wrong here. The assessment was that fame hadn't been given enough weight. And what I'm saying is
there's
a precedent that suggests that I shouldn't worry so much as you want me to worry about fame.
In the final analysis, that's correct. Fame should come in and magnify the similarities.
I just wanted to clarify where fame fits in this infringement analysis.
Yeah, but the ruling for substantial similarity, that there was no substantial similarity, that is contradicted by the 19% survey, which the commission upheld. That tells you consumers don't find them so substantially dissimilar that they don't see confusion. And the judge's subjective view should take into account that objective evidence.
Can I ask a practical question? In these cases, we tend to have confidentiality marking on everything, and lots of material is highlighted in yellow throughout. And frequently, more of the judges from the bench will say, is that really, we understand why it may have been in play earlier, but is that going to constrict how we write opinions? Is this confidentiality marking mutually of significance to you and the other side, or is it just you, or can you release us from some of this?
If we knew what it was, Your Honor, so I guess that makes it a little difficult. Certainly, how much we spend on advertising, that is confidential and shouldn't be released to the public. Some of the information, I think, was Mahindra confidential because the vehicle wasn't released yet. But I just don't know. There is a big confidentiality record in ITC cases.
I think take a hard look and give us perhaps some amended documents.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Now, I don't seem to have an accurate listing of counsel, but have you decided who goes next? Are you Ms. Murad?
Yes, Ms. Murad.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. I'm here on behalf of the Commission.
Can you take your mask off? Are you arguing for the government?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry. Yes, I'm arguing on behalf of the Commission. May it please the Court.
Could you speak up just a little bit, please?
Okay. I'd like to first address Mahindra's genericness arguments. And they're based on a misapprehension of the record and the conflation of the law of genericness with lack of secondary meaning. So Mahindra does not really offer any persuasive evidence from 1950s onward concerning genericness, nor can they do that because FCA and its predecessors since World War II and until today were the only company selling the Jeep trade dress in the marketplace, with the exception of Mahindra's infringing Roxor.
Do you understand the appellant to challenge the genus?
Yes, and so on the genus analysis, Your Honor, Mahindra only tells half of the story. So first of all, they waived that argument. They challenged the commission's genus
finding. I'm just asking you, I mean, where the argument was being made on appeal here that the selection of the SUV was legally incorrect?
It was made for the first time in the reply brief at page 32, but not in the opening brief, and that was part of my notes. So those arguments are waived. And same thing, their reliance on the Royal Crown case to argue that only an aspect of the genus is at issue here, that was also cited for the first time in the reply brief. And so on the genus issue, they say half of the story. Yes, the Commission found that the relevant genus is the SUV, and the Commission relied on substantial evidence. Some of it was Mahindra's expert own testimony. That's at Appendix 125, citing Appendix 9271, 9272, and FCA's evidence of more than 30 awards received by the Jeep Wrangler in the SUV category. That's at Appendix 55121. But the other half of the story is that the Commission also considered Mahindra's genus. And so Mahindra proposed the 4x4 off-road utility-type vehicles before the Commission. That was at Appendix 6263 and citing Appendix 12687, 12708. But there is no evidence that such category exists in the marketplace and in the eyes of the relevant public. And Mahindra's expert admitted he created that category for purposes of the litigation and without any support from any trade publications or otherwise. That's at Appendix 9269, 9270. But the second issue with Mahindra's genus is that it fails the second prong of the genericness test because the Jeep trade dress does not refer primarily to the genus proposed by Mahindra. The Commission considered the family tree created by Mahindra's expert to illustrate his category of vehicles. That's at Appendix 28057. And by the way, that family tree also includes the Willys MB, which is the World War II vehicle. But he admitted that he included vehicles in that family tree that had nothing to do with the Jeep trade dress other than having a boxy body. That's at Appendix 9499. And the Commission cited that at Appendix 56. So even assuming that Mahindra's alleged genus is correct, the Jeep trade dress does not refer primarily to that genus so as to be generic. Now I want to come back to Mahindra's argument that the World War II vehicle is generic. That argument is incorrect because they rely on a 1948...
Incorrect or unsupported or what?
It's unsupported, Your Honor, because for... a trade dress to be generic, it has to be so common and used by third parties. There is no widespread use ever here. In the 1948 FTC decision, the FTC, first of all, has no authority to adjudicate genericness under the FTC Act and says nothing about generic. Rather, it found that Willys Overland, which is FCA's predecessor, engaged in false advertising when it claimed sole credit for the wartime success of the World War II vehicle. But importantly, the FTC decision shows the opposite of genericness. During the war, only two companies manufactured the World War II vehicle for the Army, and those were Willys Overland and Ford, a compulsory licensee of Willys Overland. So at best, the FTC suggests that the World War II vehicle may have lacked secondary meaning during the war, but not that it was generic. In fact, there is no evidence in the FTC decision or otherwise of any widespread use by third parties so as to make the World War II vehicle and much less the Jeep trade dress generic. So as the Commission...
Your argument is that it was never generic at any time and it's not generic now.
That's that is your correct, argument.
Do you have a view or position on even if something was generic, I'm not saying it is, but even if it was, that doesn't mean that it can't be acquire secondary meaning or become non-generic 70 years later.
Yes, Your Honor, and there are cases on that, actually. There's the Singer case where...
Which case?
Singer.
Singer.
Okay. I think the it's in McCarthy. Hold on just a second. I can tell you exactly where in McCarthy. They discuss two cases. One is the Singer case. It's sections 1230 to 1232.
What is the slide?
McCarthy, sections 12.
Yeah, is there a case?
Yeah, and they discuss a couple of cases in there.
Were these cases in your brief?
We cite to McCarthy sections 1230 and 1231.
Okay. McCarthy makes a statement that says you can retrieve a generic patent with secondary meaning later on?
Yes, they discuss a couple of cases where the trademark lost trademark status.
Is it typical that you cite a treatise instead of the cases? I'm confused.
No, we also cited other cases, Your Honor, that recognized that that a trademark can regain trademark status. We cited, for example, the Harley-Davidson case, which recognized that proposition.
Are you talking about the Singer versus Briley case? It's actually cited in FCA's brief at... it's a Fifth Circuit case decided in 1953.
That's correct.
You're referring to?
That was one.
And you think that that case says expressly that even if a mark is generic, it can become non-generic later?
I believe so, Your Honor. That's what I believe. I'm not sure if that's the case that Sife said, but I believe that at least McCarthy states that Singer is a brand that has lost trademark status and was found to be generic, but later regained trademark status.
It's generally better to give us the cases anyway and know about the cases.
And Harley-Davidson also is a case that recognized that trademark status can be regained even after a finding of genericness. And Mahindra distinguishes that case by saying, well, in Harley-Davidson, it specifically discusses that you can only regain trademark status if you were a proper trademark at the beginning, but this trademark was generic at the outset. But this is not true, Your Honor. This trademark was never generic at the this trademark was never generic at the outset, and famous does not mean generic, Your Honor.
So, are you distinguishing between trademark law and trade dress law?
So we understand that under trademark law, the test that was, for example, proposed in Ray Cordua and in Marvin Jin seems to apply more easily to a word mark rather than to a trade dress. But and we cited to McCarthy again that collected some cases where it stated that for the trade dress, it's more easy to understand genericness in the context of, for example, is it a common design? Two of the cases that were cited in McCarthy, and they're also cited in our brief, are, for example, the Malaco case, where they give the example of gummy-shaped candy, gummy fish-shaped candy. And they said, it's so common in the industry, the use is so widespread, there are so many competitors that use it, that it's become generic. There's another case that discusses green 12-ounce cans. It's the Paddington case. It's also cited in our brief. And in that case, they say, well, the green 12-ounce cans is so common in the soft drink industry, it's generic. So those are cases that discuss genericness in the context of trade dress. But the commission did both. The commission found it's not so common as to be generic. That's at Appendix 136. And the commission also went through the In Re Cordua test of looking at the first step and defining the genus and then determining whether the trade dress at issue refers primarily to the genus so as to be generic. Okay. I'm going to turn now to secondary meaning, which is Mahindra's second issue on appeal. Mahindra's arguments on that issue lack legal support and ignore 7 years of efforts by FCA and its predecessors to cultivate secondary meaning in the Jeep trade dress. The Commission's determination on secondary meaning is based, as I said, on 7 years of exclusive use, extensive advertising and sales, numerous awards, unsolicited media coverage, and an intent to copy by Mahindra. And Mahindra also credited FCA's expert survey evidence, which showed a 55.7 net percentage of survey respondents who associate the Jeep trade dress with the Jeep brand. On the other hand, the Commission assigned no weight to Mahindra's survey evidence on secondary meaning, and Mahindra does not appeal this determination. That's at Appendix 144 and 145. So the Commission found that each of the converse factors weighs in favor of secondary meaning, and the Commission should decline Mahindra's invitation to reweigh the evidence of record. just want to make clear that the trade dress that was tested in the survey, that's the entire trade dress. It's not just a grill, as Mahindra suggests. The survey images at Appendix 51015, they show side and corner views of the entire Jeep vehicle. Dr. Isaacson, who was FCA's expert, testified at Appendix 8882 that he tested all the six trade dress elements together, and he did not just focus on the grill. As to likelihood of confusion, a simple examination of the vehicles that are at issue in this appeal demonstrates the correctness of the Commission's determination. The side-by-side images reproduced at pages 4 and 5 of the Commission's brief show substantial similarity with the original Roxor and a very low degree of similarity with the redesigned Roxor. FCA incorrectly argues that its fame outweighs lack of similarity. There is no support for that argument. To the contrary, this court held in Converse, and it is binding precedent for the Commission, that lack of similarity is dispositive. And that was not the only factor supporting the Commission's determination as to lack of likelihood of confusion. The Commission also relied on substantial evidence negating confusion, including unsolicited press and social media reactions to the redesigned Roxor. That's at Appendix 220, citing Appendix 73200 to 73208 and 73260 to 73266. And finally, I just would like to point the court to two appendix pages where the Commission specifically addressed FAMES. That's at Appendix 72 in the initial final determination by the ALJ, and Appendix 217, which was the Commission modification decision as to the Roxor. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Now, again, my notes aren't clear. Would you like a few minutes of rebuttal?
I think
video.
I think we get the TV.
Or is TV. Mr. Driver standing by? Okay, there you are. All right, we've been running over. Let's make it 5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. As Judge Clevens has stated, Converse held that substantial similarity is a prerequisite to a finding of trade dress infringement. And substantial evidence supports the ITC's finding that the post-2020 Roxor is not substantially similar to the Jeep trade dress. There are at least 4 of the 5 elements recited in the Jeep trade dress that are not present in the post-2020 Roxor. Anybody looking at that vehicle could not confuse it with the Jeep. The media reports call it something from outer space, something from the Jetsons. It does not compare to a Jeep trade dress at all.
The only question, though, really, is whether there's substantial evidence to support the finding made by the ITC, right?
Correct. Yes. And there is substantial evidence. There is certainly the appearance of the vehicle itself, and the ITC and the ALJ went through element by element and discussed the differences between the post-2020 Roxor and the Jeep trade dress. The only thing that FCA now tells us to look at is the back of the vehicle, and they say it has a tub. Well, the tub is nowhere in the Jeep trade dress. It's not mentioned in the Jeep trade dress. The whole direction of the Jeep trade dress is the front of the vehicle. The grill, the headlights, the front fenders, all those are off the post-2020 Roxor. None of them appear there. And going back to FCA's argument as to how the CJ-1955, CJ-5 vehicle was distinguished from the previous CJs, pre-1955, the only difference was extension of the front fender beyond the grill. And that, they argued, was sufficient to remove them from that previous vehicle trade dress. The post-2020 Roxor has no such fender. it doesn't have a grill that's vertical. It has this moonshot grill with the headlights on opposite sides. It is totally different from anything in the cheap trade dress. Turning to FCA's argument that the consumer survey showing 19% confusion, that is simply not sufficient. And our brief at page 24 and 25 refers to McCarthy's section, which says that if the survey evidence is less than 20%, other factors must be considered and weighed. And we cite a whole series of cases that hold that specifically. And a 19% likelihood of confusion in view of no substantial similarity is not anything to be credited. ALJ and the ITC went...
Counsel, if, yes. Let's say that survey evidence... I just want to discuss this argument for a minute. Let's say the survey evidence was 21%. Then I'm supposed to follow McCarthy and have a different result? Is that your position?
No, I think 21% is still not sufficient. You must weigh all the factors. And the factors here were weighed, including the alleged fame of the cheap trade dress. The ALJ and the ITC considered all of them. But really, looking at this vehicle, I don't see how anybody can say, with all these design changes, that this could be substantially similar to the cheap trade dress.
Was there also evidence that, evidence, I guess, previously before the design around, there had been evidence of emails and different things from consumers or pictures that showed the Rockstar device with the Jeep sign. Was there evidence, do I recall that there might have been evidence that people were no longer confused? Like, in terms of, like, emails and different things from consumers or the purchasing public?
There were emails, there were reports in the media, in blogs, in the websites that track these UTVs, and in the media and trade magazines saying how different the post-2020 Rockstar was from the previous Rockstar and certainly not looking like a Jeep anymore. If I could just turn back to the issue of whether we raised the genus issue in our initial brief, at page 41, we state the asserted trade dress is generic because the design tells the consumer what it is. A member of the category of rugged four-wheel drive military-style vehicles known as Jeeps that multiple automakers popularized following World War II. So we did raise it, in my view, and I think... it would be certainly a terrible precedent to find that the post-2020 Rockstar infringes the Jeep trade dress. That would be contrary to the Supreme Court's cautioning of trade dress protection for unregistered trade dress and wall-bottom traffic. And this court should affirm the ITC in finding the post-2020 Rockstar does not infringe and should also find that the Jeep trade dress is generic because it covers a subcategory of generic vehicles. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Now let me see, to keep this straight, Mr. Cimino, you'd asked for some rebuttal. Do you still need rebuttal time?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, let's make that 4 minutes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. So a second on the standard. So these factors are viewed for substantial evidence, but the weighing of the factors is de novo, sort of like obviousness. So for our cross appeal on the redesigned Rockstar, fame was found, that's found in our favor, but the weighing of fame with the other factors is done de novo. The survey evidence, that was found to be 19%. That goes into the weighing. We think it was weighed wrong by discounting it. And really, we think it was weighed wrong by discounting it as a matter of law. The McCarthy site that says when they're under 20, look at other factors, 2 points there. It has no site. I asked the court to follow that back and see what McCarthy's citing for that. The sentence actually says, in the author's opinion, when it's lower than 20, go back. It's an uncited statement. And his next statement, when he does have a cite, cites to another treatise by a scholar named Ford, who disagrees with him. If you look through that older publication, it says McCarthy says under 20 should be viewed in view of other factors. That's wrong for two reasons and explains why it's wrong. All the factors should always be looked at. Second, McCarthy says under 20, look at other factors. We have other factors here. Same type of goods. That was found in our favor. They can't change that. That was called a dominant factor in the first one. Fame is a dominant factor. The survey of 19% should have been a dominant factor when you weigh it all. We have the majority of factors in our favor. So when McCarthy says, look at the other factors, okay. But what happened was the substantial similarity factor acted as a trump card. And here's the problem with that. There is no evidence as to the impact on those changes, the differences that the ALJ noticed when looking at the trade dress like a patent claim. He said, this is different, this is different, this is different. He has no basis or competency to say what the effect of those changes are on the consuming public. If there's no survey evidence, well, then we take the judge's best guess for it in view of the other factors. But here, FCA introduced specific evidence that was credited, found reliable, and it stands alone. They don't have a counter survey. That shows 1 in 5 people confused the new Roxer with the Jeep trade dress. And we know from the law in this entire country, 15% is the general number. Above 15% is confusion. When you have a survey above 15%, the courts say that's evidence of confusion. Here we have 19%, and it was found against us. You did ask about there was no emails. There is some social media comments where they say it's different and this and that. But you'll see the picture in our brief, Your Honor. It was a teaser picture that covered up the entire vehicle except the front grille, which is the thing that's different. It didn't show it from the side. It didn't show it from the three-quarters. So, of course, they found it was different. You can't that is not substantial evidence that the overall appearance is the same. He said anybody could tell the difference just looking at it. Not true. The evidence of record is 19% of the people can't tell the difference. 19%. It'll be the only case, only trademark case where 19% accepted survey stands and the vehicle, a product is still allowed to be made. And again, you can look at that de novo in the weighing of all the elements magnified by fame. And finally, I will say that even if you accept all the factors the way the ITC did them, it's still 8-4 in our favor. That shows how much of a finger was on the scale of the ALJ's decision that they were different, with no evidence of what those differences may mean to the consuming public, which is what this 13-factor test is supposed to tell us. It's supposed to tell us that. His decision cannot be correct when you have a valid acceptance. Either our survey's wrong, and he's right, or he was wrong, and our survey's correct. They both can't be correct. So we would ask that the court either reverse or remand for analysis of fame, acceptance of the survey. That factor should be in our favor, and to find the Roxer, the redesigned Roxer infringed. Thank you, Your Honor.
Yeah, right. Thank you. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under submission.